You're listening to the Ideal Business Show with Pat Rigsby. This is the place where fitness entrepreneurs come to learn how to earn more income, have more impact, and enjoy more freedom. Now, here's your host, Pat Rigsby.
Everyone, Pat Rigsby here with another episode of the Ideal Business Show. And today, my special guest is my good friend, Pete Dupuy. Now, many of you who are kind of in the know probably are pretty familiar with Pete as the co-owner of Cressy Sports Performance and the gentleman who I think in many cases probably plays some of the behind the scenes role on, you know, helping to craft that business into one of the premier gyms in the country. But, you know, Pete also has, you know, started to go out and share some of his business expertise through his blog, through some consulting, through some incredible Facebook Lives as well. So I thought it was a great opportunity for us to bring Pete on and really kind of pull back the curtain on the development of Cressy Sports Performance from his perspective, on some of the things that he's seeing go on in the industry, some of the things that he's helping fitness entrepreneurs like yourselves to accomplish. So welcome, Pete.
I appreciate you having me, Pat. It's quite a compliment to receive the invitation considering the roster of people you've interviewed thus far. I've enjoyed the podcast a lot.
Well, you know, I think that you're going to add a lot to the mix. I mean, obviously, I've had the good fortune to spend some time, you know, up at the Massachusetts facility and, you know, come there just as a visitor, come there as a student for one of the mentorships, come there to actually host an event at the space. So I've got to spend a lot of time there and see, you know, how effectively things run, see, you know, probably not even close to all, but see a lot of what I think, you know, goes on to operate such a large slash successful facility. So yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun and, you know, kind of share your story if you don't mind. Let's get started by, you know, taking people back a bit. I mean, everybody sees Cressy Sports Performance as this, you know, this industry leader, this facility that attracts, you know, probably most notably professional baseball players from around the country and has really positioned itself as, at least in my opinion, the leading baseball performance facility in the country. But it's a lot more than that. And, you know, I don't know how much our listeners know about everything that goes on there, but, you know, they know that it's a big deal now. But like with so many things, the things that are truly successful today that, you know, they didn't look like this 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 8 years ago. So do you mind taking us back and giving us some of the backstory?
No problem at all. I'll go way far back because I think that what people tend to be fascinated in or intrigued by is how Eric and I established a relationship in the first place. And that kind of goes back to the fall of my senior year of high school where I was tackling the college selection process. And I had what I'd call a faulty approach to it because I was so concerned with the Princeton reviews and the school rankings and some sort of value that is attached to these schools purely based on the book that you'd pick up and read about the quality of life on campus or what their alums supposedly earn coming out of school. Granted, this was before we all lived on the internet as well. And I looked at a number of schools that were favorably reviewed, but they didn't really fall in line with any specific goals for me other than to be able to say to my friends, I'm going to a great college. And my dad told me that he would pay for my undergraduate college experience, assuming I stuck with it and, you know, got it done in 4 years, which seems to be increasingly rare these days with people finishing a four-year program in 5 and 6 years and so on. But I digress. And my dad said, I'll pay for it under one circumstance. And that is that you take a look at Babson College and Bentley College, which are our business-specific schools just outside of the Boston area. And he had told me a number of times leading up to that, that if he could do it all again, he would go to a school like those two and get a business degree because he felt like it was the most functional degree you could walk away with. And it would be the most efficient opportunity to learn the art of networking and align yourself with some impressive and productive people. So I relented because at the time, $120,000 or $130,000 of tuition is a beautiful thing to have your parents cover. And I said, let's go look at Babson and Bentley. And I had a number of liberal arts schools from the New England area are very favorably reviewed that I wanted to look at as well. But ultimately, I fell in love with Babson College, ranging from the campus to the curriculum with a big emphasis on entrepreneurial studies. And I just, I fell for it the moment we set foot on campus. And from there, I applied. I got into the school, into the program. And like everybody else, I got a mailer that summer immediately before starting school, introducing me to my randomly selected roommates, one of which was a gentleman named Eric Ressy. And so I guess that right there would be an interesting way when people say, how do you find a business partner like Eric or like Pete? The answer can't really be, well, hope that you get randomly selected to live with them when you head off to college. But that's how it happened for me. So Eric and I were paired up along with another gentleman from the United Arab Emirates, a guy named Jean-Pierre from Dubai. And the three of us lived in a forced triple for our first year of college. And if you can function in a forced triple at 18 years old and your first experience living away from home with somebody, you can be fairly confident that you can function in a professional setting with them 10 years later when you're more mature and more prepared to take on those tasks. That's the start of my roots. I'd say from there, we'll fast forward a little because most of you probably know that Eric Ressy didn't graduate from business school. He got an exercise science degree and graduate degree in kinesiology from UConn. So what happened was after our sophomore year, he discovered that passion for exercise and fitness in general, and he transferred out of the program and I stayed the course, but we stayed in touch. We'd get together for the occasional Red Sox game or we'd talk sports on AOL Instant Messenger, which was relevant at the time. And we just kind of continued to be within each other's network, seeing each other a couple of times a year and just staying in touch, for lack of a better term. A couple years down the road, as he was finishing graduate school, I was actually pursuing an MBA, once again at Babson College. I was doing the one-year program, and Eric was relocating up to the Boston area because he took a job as an independent contractor at a fitness facility in Waltham, Massachusetts, just outside the city. And he shot me an email and he said, I'm going to be in town. I know I asked you every day in college to go to the gym with me. And you said no every time, but I'm going to ask you again. Why don't you come on over and get a lift in? And we got a pretty cool setup here. And it was at like the halfway point of my commute to Babson each day as I was an off-campus graduate student. And I think I may have surprised him, but I decided to go for it. And I pulled the trigger and headed on in, got to training with him, fell in love with strength training almost instantaneously, which was something I was really intimidated by because I was a grindy little soccer player who was threatened by the gym and the guys in it. I decided that I needed to get over that at the age of 24, 25 years old. And I did so. And my passion for strength training that happened pretty quickly there also aligned with the fact that Eric and I are both pretty business-minded. And our experience in that space allowed us to kind of formulate some opinions on if we were to do this, what would our business model look like? If you're ever to open a gym, what would you do? What would you replicate that you like from this facility? What might you modify? How would we attack it differently? And our training sessions kind of became strategic discussions where we casually got into the idea of opening our own space. But mind you, I had not graduated from my MBA program. I was considering other professional opportunities and it was a pipe dream of sorts. But things fell into place, and suddenly I got a phone call from Eric one day saying that he was going to do it. And he wasn't just doing it quickly. He was going to turn it around in like 72 hours. And he wanted to know if I wanted to be the business guy. And I bid on it before consulting my parents, my girlfriend at the time, the people who had job offers on the table for me. I just said, Eric, I'm in. And then I called everybody else and said, thanks, but no thanks, or this is the way I'm going. That was almost 10 years ago. We're going to hit 10 years old as a business this coming July. And it feels like a blink of an eye.
So talk a little bit about that early stage, that kind of first version of, you know, Ressy Performance, later Ressy Sports Performance, and, you know, how you guys kind of got things moving.
Yeah, well, I didn't have any fitness industry experience. I had about 6 months of on the gym training floor experience, getting lifts in during the staff lift with Eric and Tony Gentilcore and a couple other fitness professionals. And so I didn't come in pretending to know everything about everything. But what I did come in with was a pretty solid understanding of accounting and marketing and kind of, we'll say, operational strategy coming out of school. And so I was able to look at the operation from a different perspective than I think 99% of the other gym owners who get into it do. Because to me, it was almost like a school project. How would I systemize this place? How am I going to modify the way we approach our sales strategy? How am I going to standardize the client training experience across the board? And I think that was immensely beneficial to the way that the business grew quickly and professionally, because we had a fitness industry outsider strategically modifying the approach, and it's pretty rare. So those early days, I didn't worry about having any type of an opinion on our training philosophy or our assessment strategy, or we'll say the ideal client to coach ratio or any of that stuff. I purely focused on selling Eric and Tony and learning the art of giving the pitch and understanding kind of the keywords that I was going to use when interacting with parents or potential athletes to effectively position ourselves as the best option, since there's so many training options in our area. And I was solely focused on that for months, if not years. And it was good because we all kind of knew our role. Eric didn't want to be concerned with giving the sales pitch over and over again, or outlining our website, or worrying about responding to all the emails that come in, or processing payments, invoicing, all that stuff. We all found our role and stayed the course. And I think it helped us scale it a lot quicker than others, because there wasn't any convoluted nature to the way that we interacted. We stayed in our lane, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it makes perfect sense. So, you know, well, it makes perfect sense in hindsight, right? But it's probably rare at that early stage of a business. So, you know, I mean, I think we know that, you know, you guys are in such a, you know, such an outstanding facility now. I mean, what did kind of that early iteration of the facility look like from like a practical sense, or the business look like from a practical sense?
Well, the facility was a hellhole. It was a 200 square feet of space that we carved out of the corner of a pitching and hitting instruction facility that was dark and dusty and cages and buckets of baseballs all over the place. And we cleaned it up and we made it our own, but it was hardly what somebody would describe as a showcase facility. However, I'll say this. I quickly came to learn that clients aren't all that attached to the idea of having a showcase facility. And by that, I mean, when we did pull the trigger on moving into a different space and upgrading dramatically on the look and feel of not just the immediate training space, but the amenities associated with the building, the restrooms, the cafe, the ample parking, all that stuff, I had a number of regulars who pushed back, and they pushed back hard. And it totally blindsided me, because I thought they were all going to be so ecstatic about us spending money to make money and investing in the look and feel of the place. But it turned out that they were terrified that we were going to give up the community nature and the really close engagement and interaction that they had with our staff. And they thought we were going to scale it big and just become corporate in some nature. And it took some work reassuring them that our values and our objectives were still what they were a week or 2 months or whatever it was ago. And we had to do a lot of convincing, and that really caught me by surprise. So we were not even 8 months in our grungy dungeon gym space before we outgrew it and moved into a much more professional setting. That was when it was Cressy Performance, before the days of Cressy Sports Performance. And it all happened so fast. I mean, it ramped up very quickly. And I'd say 2007 to 2010 or 11 were a blur of 6.5 to 7 day work weeks and late nights and early mornings. And honestly, it was the best years of my life. I mean, it was so much fun.
So can you attribute that sort of rapid growth to any particular factors? And man, I know that it's a combination of so many things, but do any specific things stand out that allowed you to see that sort of growth that quickly?
Yeah, I mean, the most specific thing's obviously going to be aligning ourselves with Eric Cressy. I mean, really leaning heavily on that brand and that online presence. I think people feel like they've been slammed in the face with this you have to have a niche argument, but I couldn't tell you that the niche wasn't the differentiator for us. I mean, grabbing that baseball piece early and deciding that we were going to be the go-to guys for baseball specific strength and conditioning was a game changer. We were able to solely focus on helping that population in the gym, publishing material that speaks to that population outside of the gym, and just plain learning about that community of individuals and their unique set of needs. And by the time that other people, other gym owners caught on and thought, wow, we should emulate that or try and recreate that, we were so far ahead that this first mover advantage made it very easy for us to populate the gym on a daily basis. And to this day, I think we're still enjoying the perks of being the first ones to this segment. I'm sure, I'm not trying to pretend that we're the first people who ever trained baseball players, but we were among the first handful that ever declared themselves a baseball gym. And to me, that was the biggest reason for our scaling, our rapid growth, that we were solely focused on one target market.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that the first mover advantage has to be accomplished like on this national or international level. I mean, you can still reap the rewards of it, even if it's just on a local level. Now, obviously, you guys, I think, probably benefited from it both being a local thing, but also because of what was being done through that Cressy brand on the internet, being able to probably magnify that a bit. But yeah, I think that first mover advantage is such an undervalued thing. We have far too many people who I think play me too when it comes to building their business, and they wonder why they never get traction. Well, you know, I think this is a perfect example of that. So
I think I would want to build a little bit off of kind of that mentality with the internet development piece, because I don't want to paint this picture that Eric and Tony and I sat down and said, all right, how are we going to be a national brand? Because that was not what we did. We wanted to put as many bodies in the gym as we could who had expendable income and were ready to pay us for our training services, first and foremost. What happened was, since we were employing a business director who didn't entirely understand fitness in myself, what would frequently happen was I'd say, hey, Eric, I'm hitting this stumbling block. I'm having a hard time explaining how our training philosophy aligns with the goals when a parent says, I want you to make my kid faster. And I'd say, would you mind publishing some content on that so I can start directing people back to it, establish a little bit of credibility in that context, and really just say, here's a blog post when a parent says, how are you going to make my kid faster? I'd say, you know what, why don't I get your email? I'm going to send you an article that Eric published a little while back that outlines our training philosophy and explains to you why we're not going to put ladders down and have you do fast footwork drills. And they'd say, fantastic, send it as soon as you can. And that material kind of took on a life of its own. And it turned out that it wasn't just relevant to the geographically convenient population that we work with. It spoke to people all over the country. And so we had this side benefit of it scaling nationally on the internet, and it helped as we built the business bigger and the identity of the brand bigger. But the origins of the intent of some of these kind of frequently asked question blogs that Eric writes were because I was ill-equipped to give the pitch and explain it. So rather than have Eric sit me down and say, here's how you're going to answer this, you know, the genius that is Eric Cressy said, well, how can I scale the effectiveness of me answering this question? I'm going to put it in an electronic format and let a lot of people learn from it. And that's how it all got rolling and snowballing forward, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, it's brilliant in so many ways, from just kind of closing that gap that in turn kind of prevented you guys from showing up in a me too type of way, to, you know, playing to Eric's strengths as, you know, as a coach and as an educator, contributing to the marketing and selling facet of what you do. So I think that's great. So let's talk, I mean, maybe I'm oversimplifying this, but so we're kind of now at like stage two of the business, where you've moved into this new space, and, you know, what kind of things happened there? What kind of evolution were you guys experiencing at that point?
Well, right when we got into that space, I'd say it's the back end of phase one. So we're still kind of finding our identity as a business. We're trying to populate a gym that's a little bigger than what we need, but we know that projections of we'll say our performance metrics shake out that isn't going to be a problem, and we weren't particularly stressed about it. But we were building an internship program. We were kind of trying to create fitness professionals that someday we could employ that understood our culture and our training model in this unique setting. And that was allowing us to entertain more athletes and build this business bigger and bigger. I think that the moment that we hit stage two, if you were to think of this maybe like a 2 or 3 stage business, stage two was the moment that we hit a tipping point where, as I was sitting at the front desk and being both the business director and the office manager and kind of dabbling in both admin and creative thinker, we got to a point where my responsibilities of swiping credit cards and answering phones and making small talk with parents was hindering my ability to work on the business instead of in it. And so early in 2012, we hired our first office manager and got me away from the front end of the business. And it was tough. I mean, I shouldn't say it was tough performance-wise. It was tough for me kind of mentally and emotionally to give up the reins, micromanaging being the face of the client experience, because it involved me disappearing into the back room and spending more time thinking about our training strategy, our social media strategy, and brand management. And what was scary initially turned into like the best move we've ever made. I mean, we almost 2x'd our revenues in that first year just by allowing a more business focus for me and more time for Eric and I to close the door in the office and say, what are kind of our short and long-term objectives here? And by adding an affordable hourly wage employee to do the busy work, it just allowed me to free up some time to be a lot more effective at employing this skill set that I spent so much money on when I went back to get my MBA and that my dad spent so much money on from undergrad, and start really putting that to work. So that was as stage two kind of blossomed, becoming more of a national brand and more of a educator, you know, introducing mentorships and annual recurring seminars and so on and so forth. So I think that's kind of the moment that stage two really took shape. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you were able to, you know, kind of, what's the phrase, delegate and elevate in some regards as to the role you were playing in the business. And I think that's kind of an emotional experience that a lot of people go through, be it, you know, stepping away from being the face of the experience side of things or stepping away from being the direct coach to maybe coaching the coaches. Mm-hmm. So I think it's something that a lot of people can connect with. So you guys obviously have kept growing, and now even, I'm going to take a stab at this, I don't know this for sure, but I mean, was it about 2012 that you moved into your current space?
Yeah, well, your memory is good. In August of 2012, we went from 7,600 square feet of space to just a shade over 15,000. And that was in the same building. So we bid on a property that our landlord had been pushing on us for almost 2 full years. And we'd been waiting for the timing to be right and our numbers to be where they needed to be to justify it. And we made another jump. And I think we went from nice looking, respectable facility to more of a showcase facility setup, a visually appealing place where hopefully when people come into the gym, they think like, wow, this is nice looking. And that wasn't necessarily the objective in the first couple of spaces.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it not only nice looking, but it has a bit of a clubhouse feel to it. And so you guys have that, you know, baseball and beyond. I mean, there are other athletes that certainly benefit from what you guys have to offer, but you know, there's that clubhouse feel from the couches to the ping pong tables to, you know, the jerseys on the walls. And so I think it's a really inviting space that I think adds to, and clearly not by accident, the culture that you guys have worked so hard to create. So bring us kind of up to today, where things are, you know, since you've moved into this new space.
Okay. Well, today running the business is a lot more complex than it used to be. I say that because on top of the 15,000 square foot space that we're functioning in, we have a second facility in Jupiter, Florida, which is about 7,500 square feet. And in some ways, a duplicate of the space minus the indoor throwing setup and not quite as much office space, but it's very similar. And that means that Eric and I as business partners are functioning in two different parts of the country for at least half of the year. And so we're managing the direction that we're going with this via text messages and phone calls and that type of engagement. And I think it speaks a lot to the trust that we have between the two of us that honestly, there aren't that many text messages or phone calls. There might be a conversation a week and they're not particularly in depth because I think we've done a nice job of systemizing things to the point where we got a lot of things happening on autopilot and we've got a lot of really fantastic employees who are very effective at doing their own job. So today, Massachusetts is kind of like just about double the space and double the foot traffic of Florida, but they're mirror images of each other as far as training environment and training philosophy and programming strategy go. As far as the staffs go, it's pretty similarly reflected. Space to staff size is close. So I have 8 full-time employees here in Massachusetts, which includes an office manager. That includes a strength camp coordinator in the morning, so like boot camp setting, and then 6 coaches who are honestly now positioned as the face of our business because Eric's not getting as many hours in on the training floor in Massachusetts coaching as he was in the past. And I've never coached any of our athletes. So I really count on people like Chris Howard and Greg Robbins and Tony B and Nancy and this collection of great coaches to be the personality of the brand. And they're doing a really good job with it. And I don't intend to change a thing in that context. We don't really need any single rock star coach. We got a lot of very good personalities driving it on the training floor every day. And in some ways, I let them dictate the direction we're going to go with environment and culture. And as assuming it looks and feels right, I'm the one who kind of captures that content and makes it visible to the fitness community on the internet.
So, you know, I think that's a really key point because so many businesses, I think, are built on the back of personalities as far as the attractiveness of the business, the experience. And obviously, you know, Eric is, you know, just a really visible, successful leader in the industry. But I think you guys have proven that if you have the right mix of coaches and you have the right development process that, you know, that whole, I guess, limiting factor that a lot of people put on themselves that the business can't grow beyond that one person's particular shadow, you know, in their absence on the training floor. I mean, you guys have kind of put that to rest, and I know how robust the internship program you have is and how much you guys do to develop your team. So it's not by accident and it's not haphazard. So as we kind of wrap this up, and I typically ask the guests, hey, do you have 2 or 3 things that you can share that might help somebody go from that really early stage business to being maybe closer to where you guys are now, if that's where they aspire to be? Of those 2 or 3 things, do you mind touching on at least in one of them, how you guys have been able to develop a team to go out there and be the, I guess, face of the brand or that first point of contact?
Okay. Yeah. So on that subject, I think the first of the 3 things I'd tell you is as you build your team and you expand your roster of coaches, you need to focus on hiring for fit. And I'm fairly certain Eric probably said this in some capacity when he spoke with you in one of your first couple of podcast recordings, but it's so important that it bears repeating. We do have a certain level of expectation for skill set, but the reality is we're more concerned with hiring personalities than we are with hiring resumes. And so we know that there are holes to fill when it comes time to hire. And we're not trying to hire Eric Cressy clones. I don't need another Eric from his style, from a bedside manner standpoint, as far as how he communicates to athletes, right on to how he assesses athletes. They're all going to get there eventually because our team spends so much time together on the gym floor, in staff meetings, and in services, that I know they're all going to end up in the same place as far as philosophy goes. But we need to plug personality gaps in because as much as we are positioning ourselves as the baseball guys, we have a ton of athletes from general fitness population or a variety of different sports and athletic backgrounds. So they're all different people with different learning styles and different needs in the gym. So it's important that I have a charismatic female coach like Nancy, or I have a really thoughtful and slow-paced, introspective, deep-thinking coach like Miguel. And I need to have a lot of different styles of coaches on my team to make sure that we can effectively service a really broad range of client types. When an assessment gets into our schedule and my office manager, Stacy, says, who do we want to align this coach up with? I'll say, based on the phone conversation I had to this point, I think Greg Robbins is the perfect fit. And we might adjust on the fly if Greg is working with that athlete and he thinks, you know, this is really a better fit for Tony B. Let's slide him into the mix during the screening process and go from there. That's fine. But I like to know that we have a lot of tools in the toolbox as far as coaching options go. And that all just circles back to hiring for fit, you know, hire the right personalities and let the skill set kind of play itself out during the learning process.
Awesome. So, you know, as we kind of wrap this up, are there any other tips or insights that you think you would like to share that, I mean, you deal with coaching or consulting clients on a pretty regular basis as well. Any key takeaways that you might share with those guys that you mind kind of passing on here?
You know, I think one of the maybe the most surprising ones that you'd hear, or maybe you use this all the time, but more and more lately, I find myself telling consulting clients that they need to make more time for family and they need to carve out some time in their schedule to spend an hour each morning with their kid, or go for a walk at the end of the day with their wife, whatever it may be. Because at some point recently, it became this universal standard to grind or hustle and just work your face off. And I'm cognizant of burnout. And I find that the majority of the people that I work with in an ongoing consulting basis need to be told sometimes, I want you to wake up and spend an hour talking to your son or daughter. And it just changes the way that we run our business when we're at peace with what's going on outside of the facility. So that might be my single best piece of advice. Beyond that, I think that there's a major problem with the Me Too type business owners that you've mentioned having such a lack of authenticity that they never really find their voice. They're just kind of this merging of a lot of different approaches and styles, and it never comes across as authentic. And that's the biggest shortcoming in the way that their brand develops, that it never really establishes a unique identity.
Pete, that's awesome. You know, I think that, you know, obviously those last couple of points are things that I, you know, I'm very passionate about sharing. So, you know, I think what's great about it is, I mean, your tangible proof of how, you know, being cognizant and proactive with those two things can help you build the business you want to have. So if somebody wants to learn more about Cressy Sports Performance or about the business coaching, consulting, or insight you have to offer, can you give me a couple places they can find you?
Yeah, I think if you wanted a reflection of my work relating to the business itself, I'd say keep an eye on our social media platforms where we're most active on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Those are all coming essentially either from my desktop or my phone, because Eric manages the Eric Cressy brand and I manage the Cressy Sports Performance brand, essentially. But as far as business insights go, I publish a blog every Thursday on my website, which is just petedepuy.com. And that is typically me staying well within my lane, which is speaking to the experience of running a fitness facility, managing a team, and systemizing and increasing operational efficiencies. I'm never really trying to be something that I'm not. I don't understand how to launch a product. I couldn't write three books in the next 6 months like you're doing. I'm not going to even begin to position myself as a guru on that stuff. I only talk about what I know.
Well, and you talk very well about what you know, and you prove it out on a daily basis within the confines of the facilities and developing the staff. So, I mean, I think that if somebody's looking for some consulting advice, you know, somebody to work with to really develop those facets of their business, they're not going to find anybody better than you to do it. So
I really appreciate that. Thank you.
So guys, if you didn't catch all that, it'll be in the show notes, you know, on the site. So you can certainly follow those links. And Pete, wonderful having you on. I'm sure we could probably do this over and over again and keep digging deeper on some of these topics that I know are so important. So hopefully we can have you back down the line here. Thanks a lot. And I'll look forward to connecting with you again soon.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks a lot, Pat.
Thanks for listening. We've got a special gift for our listeners. We're giving away 52 cut and paste newsletters that you could start using for your fitness business today. To get your special gift, head on over to patrigsby.com/gift.